sang out a song of the soul.
And we'll sing this song. Why don't you sing along? And we can sing.
Music has an incredible ability to proclaim the soul's language beyond what mere words can speak. That is what we seek as we invite our guests to share their song of the soul. Be it joy and laughter, sorrow and tears, awe and insight, or deepest devotion, as we visit and listen, we are all part of a spiritual voyage called Song of the Soul. We have a delightfully different guest and music here for you today on Song of the Soul. Kiran Ahluwalia was born in the Punjabi area of India, but moved with her family to Canada when she was 7, well after she started training in the traditional music of her region. Kiran has continued with her training, both deepening and widening it. While her 8 albums are definitely rooted in the music of her homeland, she has also enriched, extended, and diversified the songs she creates, most often carrying a message of connection and compassion. She divides her time between her homes near Toronto, Ontario, and New York City. And she joins us today via Zoom from Toronto. Kiran, how wonderful to have you here today for Song of the Soul.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
You're in Ontario, just outside of Toronto. Have you been living there a long, long time? And I understand you share space with New York also?
Yeah, I divide my time between New York City and Markham, Ontario.
How long have you been there then?
My parents and I moved to Toronto when I was a child, and we immigrated from India to Canada. It's been home ever since then. I'm a Canadian citizen, and in the United States, I live on a green card. My husband was born in Pakistan, but is an American citizen. He was also a very young child when he moved to California with his parents. So on both sides of the world, we're on opposing teams. And on the other side, we're from India and Pakistan, who are constantly at war. And on this side, we're Canada and the USA, who are not at war, but are certainly at disagreements with each other sometimes.
But if we could learn from you and your husband, would the world become peaceful finally?
I mean, I love that concept. I love that idea. But it's just right now, it just seems laughable, actually. That's the only thing I could do. It's, you know, either laugh or cry. Both of our parents grew up with turmoil between both the countries. So when the British left the region of India, India got divided into two countries, India and Pakistan. What followed was the largest land migration of people known to human history. And it was very bloody. Trains would come from the Pakistan side. And by the time the train stopped at the Indian side, in a city in the Indian side, it was basically all corpses. There was a lot of bloodshed. My mother, as a child, was on one of those trains with her mother, my grandmother, and witnessed this bloodshed firsthand. My husband's parents on the Pakistan side, they witnessed this bloodshed firsthand. But having lived through that is what I think made them understand that this cannot happen again. When I talk to people in other parts of India that didn't live through partition, is what we call it, the separation of two countries, when I talk to people like in Maharashtra, a state in India, they have still a lot of hatred for Pakistan. And sometimes when I talk to Pakistanis who didn't live through partition, it's also vice versa. They have hatred for Indians. But for people who lived through it, I think it's easier for them to understand that that's just not humanity. And you can't hate, because hate isn't just hate. It will grow and grow and become violence and absolute utter inhumanity. Now, our parents lived through all that, but they never shed down. They never passed down any hatred to either one of us. For that reason, our love, my love for Rez, who was born in Pakistan, brought up in America, for that reason, we were able to flourish in our love, able to do music together. Our parents are best friends, and there was no Bollywood drama when we were dating or getting married.
My understanding is that India still has a very significant minority of folks who are Muslim. I don't know that that's true in Pakistan, that there are Hindus or Sikhs or whatever as much in Pakistan, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm just making a wild guess. Do you know?
Yes, you are right. Pakistan was formed more on the basis of religion. When it was formed, I don't think that the first Prime Minister, Jinnah, envisioned how religious and strict it has now become. I don't think he envisioned that, but it was definitely meant to be a homeland for Muslims. And as such, other religions have not been able to thrive there. I've been there, and there are Sikhs there, and there are definitely two important Sikh temples there still. There are Christians there, but other religions have been persecuted in Pakistan. India was formed on a secular basis. It was meant to be a land for all religions, and there are a plethora of religions in India. The largest by far, approximately 80% of India is Hindu, according to the 2022 national census. And then Muslims are the second majority at about 14-15%. So India was formed on the basis of secularism, where all religions would coexist. The constitution gives the right of equality for all religions. But lately, what has been happening in India is there's been the rise of a type of a Hindu fundamentalism that is making India a land mostly for Hindus, only for Hindus, and definitely attacking the Muslim religion and leaving them as second-rate citizens. A lot of people, a lot of interviews that I do with people who are interested in India, they approach the interview with a lot of like the enlightened parts of India, like yoga and meditation and other things. And it's a real surprise to them. It's a real shock as to what's happening there right now.
Well, just as in the United States, there's been a rise of a Christian right wing and a fundamentalism that does not raise up the best of Christianity from my point of view. Of course, being Quaker, I don't have to be aligned with one thing or the other. I could be Sikh if I wanted and be a Quaker. It'd be just fine. But the idea that, well, there's only one way to be Christian and it's our way, and if you're not good, then we get rid of you. That is rising in the U.S. Canada, I tend to think better of, but it's got its own issues, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think Canada is better in that way. It's not devoid of racism or inequality, but there are fewer people here and things aren't as extreme, definitely, as things are in America.
Actually, with the time that I spent up in Toronto in the early 90s, my impression, I basically grew up living in Milwaukee from 1980 until I moved to Eau Claire. And Milwaukee, I understand, is one of the most segregated and with overtones of racism in it of cities in the United States, which makes me very sad to think about that. But when I went to Toronto, I was always impressed that when I would see a group of four people walking down the street, it would include someone who was evidently African of origin or Mexican, someone from China, someone from Europe. It always seemed to me much more integrated than what I was used to in Milwaukee. Is that your experience? I'm sure there's still divisions, but does that interconnection seem to happen as well as it does in your band?
Maybe not as well as my band. There are pockets of people in Canada who don't accept diverse cultures. The majority of Canada does accept diverse cultures. Apart from the Aboriginal people, the Indigenous people of Canada, everyone here is from someplace else. I mean, it's true for the United States as well. But in Canada, we're more aware and it's more at the front of our mind that we are all immigrants here, every single one of us, even the white people, even the Scottish and the British and the Irish, and only the Indigenous are people that aren't immigrants, that have been here since time began.
Well, it's not since time. They were immigrants, too, at one point, but I don't think any other people were living there at the time when many of the Indigenous tribes moved in, the people who came across the Bering Strait or however they got from the Euro-Asiatic landmass over. And in any case, it was always inspirational to me that in Toronto, things seemed to be a bit better mixed than they were in Milwaukee. And mind you, I love Milwaukee in many ways, but still, that doesn't stop me from seeing the faults or the areas where there's still growth potentially. You seem to think about and sing about such things, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do. One of the songs in this album is called Tera Jag. That means your world. And it's a lament to God, really, who I, you know, sometimes believe in and sometimes don't. But it's a lament to whoever is guiding the universe. And the song is saying that your world, I mean, what's becoming of it? It's kind of becoming a toilet. And how am I going to traverse it? How am I going to deal with it? There is so much hatred. And how am I going to talk to people? And who am I going to make us all understand that we are from the same root? You know, you cut me, you cut you. We bleed the same red. We have the same salty tears. And that we're one.
The song is Terra Jug, Your World in English by Kiran Ahluwalia. Kiran Ahluwalia has a deep call, I think, in her heart for compassion and connection. Her website is kiranmusic.com, K-I-R-A-N, music.com. Link, of course, is on northernspiritradio.org. That song was Tera Jug. It's on her new album, just released, Comfort Food. Did you name it Comfort Food just because you know everyone was going to love it then?
No. I named it Comfort Food for two reasons. As there was growing cultural intolerance in India and in the Indian diaspora in North America, and just growing cultural intolerance the world over, it's hard to release the sadness and the anger about it. But composing these songs, it, you know, doesn't do anything to help the culture intolerance, but it gave me something to do. It gave me a release from my emotions. And so in that sense, these songs were my comfort food. At the same time, I have a song called Pancake, which I sing in my Punjabi accent, Pancake. And I thought that, okay, well, that's, it's, you know, nice to have that in there too, because pancakes are comfort food as well.
I don't think you call them pancakes in Punjabi, do you?
Well, they're not really an Indian item, a dish. They're not an Indian dish. They're a Western thing. So, I mean, they've only just been introduced to India, probably just very recently in the past few years. I've actually never had a pancake in India except for at a hotel.
Well, hopefully one day you'll visit my home here and I'll make you pancakes. My grandchildren all say I make the best pancakes in the world, and my pancakes are not like regular pancakes quite. I make them with a variety of things, including acorn flour, flour made from acorns. And I, of course, mix it with my own maple syrup that I harvest here in the woods.
If I make it to your place, I'm going to have your aloo paratha.
Okay.
Before I have your pancakes. that potato stuffed Indian bread.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Which I learned to love when I was in Toronto, which is why I started making it. My son was raised on Indian food. But we're talking about you right here. And one thing I wanted to mention about Tera Jug, the video that I also have linked on northernspiritradio.org is walking in a labyrinth in a it looks like a desertish expanse. Where is that video taken?
It was shot in the Mojave Desert, about 4 hours outside of LA.
Just trying to place it. It didn't look like Toronto to me, and I wasn't even sure if it was someplace in India.
California.
The other thing that I noticed in that video is your hand is heavily loaded down with rings. And I was just wondering if it's hard to do Indian dancing with that much weight on your hand.
No, I love those rings. The director and I were in New York City, and we went to one of those craft markets, the combination craft farmer market. But there was this jeweler there, Alessandra Pullman, and we just loved those rings. And then we asked her, we said we were making a video, and she allowed us to use those rings for the video. And they're beautiful. They weren't actually heavy. And of course, I'm not doing any genre of dance. I'm just moving the way I want to move to the music. But that was the least of my problems in the video. If you notice, at the end, there's a big, huge rock that I somehow end up on top of.
Somehow.
And so on my social media, I've posted the videos of learning how to climb that rock. The cinematographer, also from Toronto, Dale Sood, he's a rock climber. And so he gave me a crash course in rock climbing the day before. And then on the day of the shoot, I basically went up in my underwear, and he brought the dress up. Then I put my dress on up on the rock, and that's when we started shooting it. So yeah, the rings weren't so much of a problem as other things.
And I'm assuming you're climbing in your underwear without the dress because you didn't want to ruin the dress and because it's hard to get handholds or anything with a dress hanging down. I don't think that a sari is perfect for rock climbing, is what I'm saying.
There are probably women who can do it in a sari, but not me. I wouldn't be able to do it with that much fabric.
Well, let's have another song from Comfort Food, although you could have chosen songs from any of the previous seven albums. How long was the gestation for the album Comfort Food?
It was a long time because in between we had the pandemic. I had I think 6 songs composed, and I wanted to, instead of the 8 songs, I wanted to get into studio with the 6 songs. But when I was ready to record, the pandemic had started. We were still able to record, but the studio was getting shuttered down because not a lot of people were coming in to record, even though the studio has been, around for more than 20 years. So that stopped it. So then I had to look for another studio. I wasn't able to find another studio. Then my studio reopened again. And then we did the recordings bit by bit because 3 times someone in the band got COVID, including once I got COVID. So that made it go longer. Then I composed the last 2 songs, and it was just like a lot of delays because of the pandemic, basically.
Well, weren't there also delays? I think sometime before the pandemic, you dealt with breast cancer. Was that a clean recovery for you?
Yes, it has been a clean recovery for me. That was 2018. So 2018, I released 7 Billion. So I had just released my last album, 7 Billion. So then I had the breast cancer and I hadn't quite started composing for another album yet. So, 2018 was spent releasing the album and also dealing with breast cancer. And then I probably started in 2019, slowly composing.
So you're probably just getting up to speed when COVID slowed things down.
Exactly, yeah.
My wife had cancer back in 2017, and so I was aware of how that can change what you're doing in your life for a period. And mind you, she's in good health now, but there definitely was a year there where things had to slow down quite a bit.
I'm glad she's okay.
So, can we have some more music from Kiran Ahluwalia? Comfort food. I need some comfort food right now.
Okay, well, let's play Pancake. This is a song, as I said, I'm singing it in my Punjabi accent, Banageka, and the song is about the time when my then-boyfriend, now-husband, Reza Bassi, who is also my arranger, producer, and guitarist in my band, he and I were dating at that time. We were touring together, but we were dating, and we went on vacation to Puerto Vallarta. And it was an all-inclusive. I mean, you can eat whatever you want anytime. We're having our breakfast the first morning, I believe, and he looked forlorn. He looked sad. And I looked down on his plate and his pancakes were finished. And so I said to him, well, you can have my pancake. And he cheered up and he said, I love you. And that's been a theme in our marriage. And, I give him my food, mostly my sugar-filled food, and he says, I love you every single time. I will not be writing a song on broccoli anytime soon. He doesn't say that about vegetables, but anything sweet elicits quite a bit of love from him. And so this is about that time. Thank you.
ਜਪੀਆਂ ਤਪਾਈਆਂ ਚੁੰਮੀਆਂ ਮਿਲਾਈਆਂ ਹੱਥ ਮੇਰਾ ਫੜ ਕੇ ਗੋਡਿਆਂ ਤੇ ਗਿਰ ਕੇ ਜਿੰਦੜੀ ਮਿਲਾਈਆਂ ਕੋਈ ਹੋਰ ਨਾ ਦਿਲ ਬਹਿਲਾਈਆਂ ਕੋਈ ਹੋਰ ਨਾ ਦਿਲ ਬਹਿ
Alawalia is here today with us for Song of the Soul. That's her song, Pancake, from her newly released album, Comfort Food. Her website, kiranmusic.com, K-I-R-A-N, music.com. Pancake, a wonderful love dance that in the video that you'll see online, you'll see a couple different sets of people dancing. The longest period, it was three women dancing. And I was thinking, do only women get to do that wonderful dance? Of course, I've seen Bhangra dancing with men dancing too, but I was very impressed by all three of the women dancers. Can you give me all names?
So yeah, the dancers on the video are wonderful. The main dancer is a good friend and my own Bhangra teacher, Megha Kalia. She has a company called NYC Bhangra and she teaches Bhangra in New York City. And the other two dancers are my friend Arden Boyle and joining us is Maria Vichatu. Traditionally, Bhangra used to be a male Punjabi folk dance and the female counterpart was Gidda. So men did Bhangra, women did Gidda. But in the 80s, Bhangra moved from a dance from the farming fields of Punjab, a northern state in India. It moved from being an outdoor dance into a club dance. The movement was what was mainly led by Punjabis in England. And so Punjabi groups started to come up and they started to do Bhangra in a way that was danceable in an urban way in a club. And so since then, it's been a dance that both male and females dance to.
And again, Pancake is the name, and it sings of the truth that a way to a man's heart is through his stomach. How long have you two been together?
We have been married for, I believe, 19 years and been together for 21.
How did you bring this band all together?
I mean, we started out, when I started out 20 years ago in my first album, I started out doing more traditional Indian music. And over the years, I've become more contemporary and progressive in my arrangements and instrumentation.
I do want to remind our listeners that you're tuned in to Song of the Soul. Our website, northernspiritradio.org. 8.5 years we've been producing both this program and Spirit in Action. So come to the website and you find all of the guests of those past years and you'll find the connection to Kiran Aluwalia's website, kiranmusic.com. Also, when you visit, please remember to post a comment. Give us your feedback. Give us your suggestions. Help make this a two-way communication. And if you would like to support us, you can donate via our website. We fund this from listeners, not from corporations or from government. It's been an intentional choice that we've made in order to keep our agenda your agenda and not that of anyone else. And clearly, Kiran Aluwalia is carrying on a ministry, I would call it from my origins here in the United States, a ministry of connection and healing for the world. Is that the way you think of it explicitly, Kieran?
I mean, that's a tall order. I'm trying to bring attention to cultural intolerance, but it's very hard to change people's ideas.
Part of my belief is with arguments, you can only move people very little generally. But with connections through the heart, I think often we change people more than we do with explicit arguments. So there was a book I read in the 1970s which opened my mind and heart, and there are some songs that opened my heart about the way that heterosexism affects the world, which I hadn't thought of really before. But the book I read was so moving and the music was so moving that I couldn't help but say, there's more opportunities for love than I ever knew. I imagine that your music does that for the world, opening people's eyes to the possibility of connection, not to mention connection between you and Rez.
I hope so.
I did want to ask you about your roots religiously. Again, growing up in India, in the Punjab region, are Sikhs numerous in that area, or were they? I think of Sikhs as especially peaceful or connected. Of course, I think of Buddhists that way, too. It's hard to think of that area of the world with the amount of violence that has happened there.
Yes, I grew up from the Sikh religion, and my family is basically from New Delhi, so outside of the actual Punjab state. Sikhs are the majority religion in the state of Punjab, but are a minority in India as a whole. They make up a little less than 2% of the population. The question of peaceful is a hard one to answer, because religious strife and violence is a common fault line in India. Sikhs have faced persecution from the Indian government in the 1980s, and then they have fought back. So I don't really feel qualified to speak about the religion as a whole. I don't know who can really, but I can tell you that the foundation of the religion, the concept is to create both a saint and a soldier in one human being. So when the religion was being formed 400 years ago, that was the concept. The Sikhs were then being persecuted by the then Muslim ruler of the region. And so they were fighting battles then, and the religion came into being. The concept was to create a saint, meaning someone who keeps God in their mind and is peace-loving, but also to have a soldier who can stand up and defend themselves. That's the basis of the religion.
And I understand that you were raised in a Sikh household. You've explored Buddhism along the way. Atheism fits for you too. But you do daily meditation, right?
I do, yeah. I mean, meditation isn't really part of religion for me, and I don't even know if it's spiritual. Meditation is more, you know, me and myself and me and my breath, me and, you know, all my organs and blood flow. So it's more of a reset for me to start the day.
Well, I think we need to continue with a couple more songs, at least from Kieran. Where can we go next?
We can go to Dil. Dil is another Punjabi song. I composed it in the style of a Punjabi folk song, so it's very danceable. I haven't done a video of it yet. Hope to do it this September. Dil is a word that is very hard to translate in English. It's kind of like a part of the body, but it's not really anatomically any specific part of the body. When we say dil, what we mean is a portion of the heart, a portion of the brain, a portion of the soul, a portion of your desire. All of that combined is what makes up the dil. And so when you say my dil, it feels like something. It's not just the heart. It's also your brain, your soul, your desire, and other parts of you. And so the song, a love song, and the song is saying, it's talking to my beloved. And I'm saying that I haven't been telling you what's in my dil, and I've been wanting to take your hand in public, and I haven't been doing it. But today I'm going to throw away all my shame. I'm not going to be shy, and I'm going to parade. I'm going to take your hand in public, and I'm going to parade my love openly. And I started off with a very common Punjabi folk phrase, which, you know, it doesn't mean anything, but it's a very rhythmic, musical kind of phrase that is found in Punjabi folk songs.
Well, it's a distinctive part of this song. The song is Dil, D-I-L, folks. find the link on NordenspiritRadio.org. And we're going to look forward to that video in September or whenever Kieran Aluwalia can get it to us. I hope you really enjoy this one, because I do. Dill. song, Kiran Ahluwalia says she's going to throw away her shame. And I'm all for that, Kiran. As a matter of fact, I am so free of shame, my wife tells me I need more shame. And she's a psychotherapist, too. So not everyone will agree that no shame belongs here. The idea that you could or couldn't take someone's hand, in the U.S. these days, I think taking someone's hand would be a no issue. But maybe in the Punjab, it would be different norms.
Yeah. Last time I was in Punjab, which was pre-COVID, it was 2019, actually, or 2018, maybe. I don't remember a lot of people holding hands. In New Delhi and Bombay, the bigger cities, there are more people holding hands. What's common in India is heterosexual men holding hands, which is wonderful and beautiful, and heterosexual women holding hands. There's a lot of same gender holding of hands, and it doesn't mean it's sexual or intimate. It's a platonic type of intimacy. And I don't see any of that anywhere else in the world. You know, maybe it exists in other Eastern countries I haven't been to.
Maybe you've never been to Togo in West Africa, where it was common. So I got used to it there when I was in the Peace Corps, men holding hands and just being close to one another that way. So I do know it. In the U.S., it's dramatically short on supply, unfortunately.
Yeah, it would not happen in the U.S. But yeah, definitely in the villages of Punjab, hand-holding of your beloved is not so. But in the song, I use it just as a metaphor. The song for me is mainly about women traditionally not being allowed to show their lust, you know, being taught that, oh, no, women shouldn't be talking about lust. And so the song is really for me about throwing away that kind of shame and being public about your lust if it's appropriate for you at that time, but not shying away from it publicly. And then, you know, metaphorically, I've written that I'm going to take your hand publicly.
There is a contradiction that happens in the way these things are accepted or not accepted in the world. You said women can't show their lust, but they can show eroticism. As a matter of fact, they're supposed to inflame lust of other people. And in a way that men are much less encouraged to try and do that. A man showing his groin is not good. A woman showing her breasts is good in many cultures around the world. There's actually a power dynamic set up there that I'm uncomfortable with in our world. I wish we didn't have it.
I wish we didn't have it either. And there's also a lot of people do ask me, like, you know, lust, women being made to feel a little ashamed about their lust. They often think it's a phenomena of the East, you know, India, Pakistan, China. But actually, when I was going to university here in Canada, very often after a wild night out, I hear from the guy and the girl who hooked up the night before. And the next day when I hear about it, the guy is talking about it very jovially, like, oh, yeah, so-and-so and her and I woke up and she had to do the walk of shame out of my apartment. So in the Western world, we don't realize it. But, you know, the walk of shame is attributed to the woman to walk out of the apartment and not to the guy. And we're not aware that it does also exist in the Western world as well, this idea of women having to have shame.
Some of what you wrote on your website, and again, that website, folks, is kiranmusic.com, kiranmusic.com. Some of what you wrote was about the way that these lines between people, we certainly have an immense problem with racism in the United States and phobias of many different nationalities, but that's not a particularly or uniquely American experience, that it happens everywhere in the world. It happened in Togo, where I lived. I visited Rwanda, and certainly we know what that kind of thing brings to a nation like that. And of course, India, and now Pakistan as a separate nation, had to deal with that. There's so many justifications people find for hating and mistreating other folks. And I'm glad you're on the other side of that, trying to bring people together.
Yeah.
And maybe we can bring people together with one more song. Is that possible?
Yeah, yes, it is possible. Let's play the song Jaane Jahan next. Jaane Jahan translates as loved ones. And I am calling, in this case, loved ones is everybody in the world. I'm addressing us all. And I'm wondering, how long are we going to hang on to historical rivalries in the Middle East right now between Hamas and Israel? There are historical rivalries. You know, when did this conflict actually happen? It goes back decades and centuries. But at what point are we going to let go of these historical rivalries and just start with a clean slate, you know, a blank page with no hatred? And so this is a part of what Johnny Jahan is talking about.
I think it's what we're going to end with, Kieran. I'll just play this out at the end. Johnny Jahan is the song. The album, again, is Comfort Food, recently released by Kieran Aluwalia. I've got the links on northernspiritradio.org. I think, folks, you should follow the links that I'll have to videos of some of her songs and find more on her website. The dancing is really part of the rich thing to me, too, because I think that the breath that we use in singing is also best brought to fullness when we have movement. Are you normally a dancer? Is this a part of your life?
No, I started learning Bhangra dance, Punjabi folk dance, rather late in life, like probably about 10 years ago. So whereas music, I started at the age of 4, and it's been a part of my life ever since. I mean, of course, I would go to a club and do my own Bhangra dance in a club when I was a teenager or growing up in my younger 20s, 30s. But Bhangra dance as a form to study, I started rather late, 10 years ago.
Well, Kieran, your music makes me dance in my heart. So please, folks, enjoy yourself as you listen to Johnny Jahan, and remember to track down Kieran Aluwalia. Thank you so much, Kieran.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
The links are on northernspiritradio.org. Here's Johnny Jahan. We'll see you next week for Song of the Soul.
सिर्फ अपना भला तो क्या कह सकेंगे हम हैं इंसान हम हैं एक ही वतन के हिस्से हैं एक जख्म के लहू की एक ही लाली आंसू वही नामक के हम हैं
Theme music for Song of the Soul is by Chris Williamson, and it is called Song of the Soul. Check out all things Song of the Soul on northernspiritradio.org, guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Send your Songs of the Soul to me, Mark Helpsmeet, via the info on our website, and join us weekly for Song of the Soul.